Hey, serious privacy enthusiasts. Ready to ace your AI data privacy game?
Oh, you bet, Kay. Dive into the world of TrustArc's Nemity Research, your go-to for staying on top of regulatory developments in AI and privacy.
Seriously, Nemity Research maintains a massive privacy and regulatory database featuring expert guidance and analysis from legal and privacy pros.
So save time on privacy research, cut your compliance timeline, and reduce costs with Nemity Research.
Get your regulatory research and insights at your fingertips with a free trial.
So get ahead in privacy compliance and start that free trial today. Go to trustarc.com/nimity-free-trial.
You're listening to Serious Privacy by TrustArc. Please welcome our hosts, Paul Breitbarth and Kay Royal.
This was the week. The 1st of July has come and gone. The date that marks the beginning of the enforcement of the California Consumer Privacy Act, a first-of-its-kind data privacy law in America, in the words of Attorney General Becerra. In his press release, he encourages every Californian to know their rights to internet privacy and every business to know its responsibilities. The website of every business covered by the law must now post a link on its homepage that says, "Do not sell my personal information." Click on it, Becerra recommends. And remember, it's your data. You now get to control how it's used or sold. So, CCPA is here. But are companies really ready for it? That's what Kay and I will be talking about today. My name is Paul Breitbarth.
And I'm Kay Royal, and welcome to Serious Privacy. So, I think the CCPA is a fascinating topic, if only because so many of us who work full-time in privacy are almost sick and tired of hearing about the CCPA.
Sounds a bit like GDPR 2 years ago.
Right? Well, and frankly, a lot of companies preparing for CCPA are probably sick and tired of hearing about CCPA, but nevertheless, it's a thing, and there's going to be enforcement, and you have to do certain activities, so here we are.
Let's get the work done.
Let's get the work done, right? So recently we did a webinar on CCP update, what you need to know about the CPRA. We'll go into that in a minute, and the July 1st enforcement. But yesterday was July 1st. Did you see any headlines come out yesterday or today that the Attorney General publicized any investigations on anyone?
No, but I also didn't expect any. Also for the GDPR, it took a bit of time before we saw the first investigations, and it has to take time. I mean, in this case, there is a difference between the entry into force of the legislation and the enforcement date. But even then, I would expect that the AG would not immediately on the very first day come down with decisions. If any investigation would already be ready, which I sincerely doubt, but if there are any that are ready yet, I wouldn't expect that to hit just before the 4th of July weekend. Maybe just after.
I didn't take into account the holiday timing. I kind of had this little thought in the back of my brain, you know, away from the active processing into the little back dream processing, that the reason why the Attorney General made such emphatic statements about companies must be prepared July 1st, he was not going to hold off enforcement, was because maybe he had a target or two in mind, and that during this time, since the CCPA went into effect January 1st, that during this time, he's been collecting information. That way, as soon as July 1st hit, wham, there's a press release that requests for information or investigation launched on so-and-so. I kind of thought that would be really exciting. I mean, I would have hated to be the company he was targeting, but I thought that would be exciting for him to come out with a really positive, well, I guess it wouldn't be a positive statement, but an emphatic statement on July 1st. But I didn't take into account the holiday. You would think there would be some human consideration for that too.
Maybe, and I'm not completely sure how the California AG works, but if I had already started collecting information from the 1st of January to date, planning to do an investigation, maybe I would not announce the investigation until the results were there. Or maybe I would want to verify first on the 1st of July and maybe the 2nd of July that everything that I found that might not be right is still wrong.
Right.
Because you could have seen in March or April or May that things are not in order, but maybe by July 1st they had changed, and that also takes time to verify. So I don't know what their communication and enforcement strategy is. Could be that, like here in Europe, they don't announce any investigations before they are completed, or generally DPAs don't announce investigations before they are completed, or maybe they just want to do some verifications first before finalizing their press release.
Could be. And around here, it varies. I mean, it's not uncommon to see an investigation launched story, or Attorney General sent out so many letters, or the FTC sent out 20 letters to companies doing so and so, before you get any judgments in mind or any decisions are made. Typically, they are public about launching an investigation. But on the other hand, it's also not uncommon not to announce an investigation and launched. And you're right. Maybe up through June 30th, maybe their privacy notice was out of date, and of July 1st, maybe they fixed it, which doesn't mean they were in compliance as of January 1st, but it means they've taken steps to correct it, and there is that provision in CCPA.
At least as of 9 a.m. Pacific time on July 2nd, there is nothing on the website of the AG on enforcement.
I love the internet, right? I love the internet.
But Kay, aren't you forgetting something?
What? What am I forgetting?
To start off our episode.
Oh my gosh, my unexpected question. Why do I not think about this when it's you and I? So, okay, hold on just a second. Let's pull up an unexpected question. Oh, you know what? I'm not going to even look one up. We're going to go off the top of the head here. In the United States, we have no intention in most places of doing fireworks for July 4th. What is your favorite type of public celebration of a holiday? I love fireworks, but I quit liking them because of the impact on dogs and people with PTSD. But what is your favorite type of public celebration for a holiday?
I like street music parties, just nice concerts, and that's something that traditionally has been pretty big here in The Hague. We have our national holiday currently on April 27th. It used to be April 30th. It's linked to the birthday of the monarch. And the night before, here in The Hague, we have a music festival. It's called the Life I Live Festival. And all throughout the city center, there are small concerts, open air. So people just go to open air bars, get a drink, listen to the music, and they make their rounds through the city center. And that's perfectly nice. It can get very crowded. That's why it didn't happen this year. But in general, it's nice. Sometimes the music is awful, and sometimes it's very much fun.
I was about to say, oh, that is fascinating. But it is fascinating.
It is, of course. And you discover new bands, and sometimes they have really big names doing a gig, and sometimes it's small local bands and even teenagers with their high school bands. And it's all sorts, all kinds of music from 6, 7 p.m. until 2, 3 a.m. in the morning.
That really is fascinating, because I'm not a big person in going to big open-air music concerts here, and they do have them. They usually call them like Battle of the Bands or something like that. But it's because I don't like certain types of music. Okay, there's particularly one type of music I don't like. Heavy metal or screaming guitars or whatever you want to call this kind of music. And so I don't tend to go because that music is very popular with pretty much everyone but me. But my favorite type, now that I don't thoroughly enjoy going to fireworks displays because I want to make sure my dogs are okay, I like light festivals. So whether it's a parade of boats down a river or it's a downtown area of a town covered in lights, I like light festivals. I think they're cool.
Oh, we have some nice ones of those as well.
I bet you do, and I need to come over and see them. We're just going to have to put that on the agenda.
We have the Amsterdam Light Festival in winter, where they have all kinds of art, works of art.
Okay, but you said winter.
In winter, yes. All kinds of...
And winter over there is still cold.
Well, it's around 0 degrees Celsius.
Okay, see, no.
But it's fun. You have, I think it's 15 to 20 works of art all made out of light, and you do a canal tour. So you go on a boat, you dress very warm, and you bring hot drinks, and then you do a canal tour, going around the canals along the illuminated works of art. Or you walk, but
okay.
By boat is much more fun.
Okay, I would look gorgeous in a furred cape and everything, and the little fur muff and everything. And yeah, I can get behind this. I can do this.
We even did it with a fire on the boat of friends.
Ooh, see, there we go. All right, sorry, people. Although I just heard an interesting fact this morning. There was this article about 30 most unusual facts, and these were the most upvoted facts on Reddit. One of them is one that sticks in my head anyway, but another one was, there were two others that were really fascinating. One was that the International Space Station is closer to the Earth than San Francisco is to LA.
What?
See? That's the expression I had. The other one was that Anne Frank and Martin Luther King Jr. were born on the same day, or the same year. Same year. Must be same year. They were born at the same time. And at that time, Betty White was already 7 years old, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and the one that sticks in my head, because this is one of my favorite, there are people who don't have an inner monologue running.
How can that be?
I don't get that one. But okay, all right, sorry, everybody knows. Okay, back to business, CCPA. And Paul and I will start to do a little bit more of these conversations just between he and I, because that was the original intent of the podcast. And we started inviting guests on, and we love having our guests. Don't get me wrong. And then next week, I'm going to do kind of an open mic experiment. We'll see how that runs while Paul's on vacation. I'll have a guest host, people who have definitely signed on, but we'll see how it turns out. But yeah, Paul and I love having these conversations together because the perspective between Europe and the U.S. and how things run is okay, y'all know what I'm about to say. It's fascinating. Privacy is fascinating and how people approach it. So the CCPA, let's talk about it. And I want to quickly catch people up on the timeline for the CCPA, which is quite unusual when you consider that it's changing so much during the time it was first proposed. And the next ballot initiative has been approved to go on the November ballot. So this all started in September of 2017. With the first ballot initiative, it qualified to be on the November ballot in May of 2018. So 2018, it would have been on it. But on June the 21st of 2018, the Californians for Privacy, Alistair McTaggart, and the governor and the legislature came to an agreement that if they passed a law within the next, I think it was 8 days, and they did it in 7, then he would withdraw the ballot initiative. And they did that. They passed the CCPA into law on June 28th. And this is why the original version of the CCPA seemed like it was written by high schoolers. Some people say law students. I disagree. I think it was worse than that. I think it was high schoolers.
So how much difference was there between the ballot initiative and the text of the CCPA as adopted by the legislature?
There was a significant amount of difference between them, but they had a minimum set of standards that they had to meet, and they met those minimum standards. However, Alistair, if I may call him Alistair, maybe I'll ask him one day if I can ever convince him to come on our podcast. I just need to reach him. But he's disagreed with how watered down it has become, and so that's why he's launched the next ballot initiative. But the CCPA was signed into law June 28th, and then in September, they had to make their first set of amendments. Most of those were grammatical corrections.
That's September 20th?
Yes, 2018. So those were mainly grammatical corrections, fixing parts of the law that conflicted with other parts of the law, kind of making it sound like maybe it was actually a law. So
that's
they did
useful.
That, and they, right? And the Attorney General's office had their first public forums for rulemaking in the first quarter of 2019. They had a short series of them. But then the CPRA was actually announced in 2019. Now, the first forums for rulemaking was the first quarter of 2019. Then the CPRA was announced in September. I was at the IAPP in Las Vegas when it was announced. I remember when it was announced, it kind of hit the airwaves right then, and people read it out on stage. It was interesting. The second set of public forums for rulemaking were in October. Well, no, the October was the first draft of the first regulations. The first public hearings were in December. Before the first public hearing started, the second set of amendments came out, the CCPA. So the regulations came out October 10th and the amendments came out October 11th, both of which we were waiting with bated breath to come out. Then it went into effect January 1st, 2020. So we're almost up to where we are now. The second set of draft regulations came out in February of 2020. Now, at this time, we were under the requirement that enforcement of the CCPA had to start 6 months after the regulations were adopted, but no later than July 1st. We're within that six-month time frame now. So whenever regulations are passed from this point, CCPA goes into effect July 1st, or goes into enforcement July 1st, excuse me. And then March 7th, the third set of draft regulations came out. And then June 1st, the final set of regulations were submitted to the Office of Administrative Law, who has 30 days typically to approve. And they are now under, because of COVID, orders for 60-day extensions to everything, so they have 90 days. But the Attorney General did ask them to do an expedited review. But the last time I looked, and I think you have to do this when you file them, they were not submitted for emergency review. So don't know what's going to happen there. And now we're at July 1st. Now we're July 2nd, and it's entered the enforcement phase, which I do believe that the Attorney General plans to enforce it, but I don't believe he plans to go, you know, whole hog party, let's grab everyone. I think he plans to look at significant violations of the CCPA, something that truly impacts the consumers, not something minor such as you don't have the right privacy notice passed and you need to fix it, but something that's a major infraction of the law that violates the entire spirit of the law. And I personally, and I've never met the man, believe that he has some companies in mind that he wants to investigate, perhaps.
Well, that would make sense. I mean, I think all the data protection authorities here in Europe had companies and private sector organizations in mind that they would want to go after. And in many situations, you see that that has happened. Although the very first enforcement cases were probably also the unexpected ones, just egregious violations that they came across, complaints that were filed that nobody was aware of, that something was wrong maybe up front, or the ones that were very easy to investigate. Like a shop in, I think it was in Austria, shop with a CCTV camera without any notice that CCTV was being used. So I do believe that the AG would certainly have companies in mind to investigate, but I'm sure he'll get tip-offs and complaints as well that he will have to take into account.
I'm sure he will. And we have started our private action and lawsuits already. I mean, that's no surprise to anyone. A citizen can file a lawsuit, whether it's an individual lawsuit or whether it's a class action. There is a private right of action under CCPA. For breaches.
I wanted to say, that's not a blanket right of action, right? It is only for breaches.
It is only for breaches. And in fact, there is a provision of the CCPA that says that the CCPA is not to be used as a foundation for any other action. So it's only for breaches. And so there are a few of them that are out there now. I'm looking at 5, 6, maybe 4 or 5 that have been filed that are public that I've looked at. So it's, one is against Salesforce.com, one is against Ring, let's see, there is one against Clearview AI, and one against Zoom Video. Then there's one on the behalf of children that are against Zynga. So, and that one is a putative class action. I think the others, class action, I would assume most of these are class actions because that's what attorneys are going to want to go for.
That occurred since January 1st.
Yes, to my understanding, yes.
Interesting.
So I think it's interesting. Well, hold on. So maybe not. This one was a class action arising from a data breach which occurred from September through November of 2019. And so I guess, and this is something I'd have to look for. Maybe they didn't announce it until 2020, or I'd have to go back. I will apologize to my listeners that I am unclear on whether or not you can proceed with a private right of action for a breach that occurred before the CCPA went into effect or went into operation on January 1st.
Well, it could be linked to that same 12-month period that you also have, which to me is a bit strange, but that is because we have a blanket right of access here in Europe.
It doesn't make a lot of sense, frankly, because if you're looking at the right to deletion and you have a 12-month look back for the right to know, and you look back 12 months for the right to know, and let's say you want your email deleted from their records, and so they only have to give you the information for the past 12 months of where your email is linked to any activity or any products or services or whatever. So then you say you want to delete them. Well, does your deletion only go to that past 12 months, or does your deletion go across the board? Because if you only delete it for the past 12 months, that's ridiculous. That's ineffective if they're still going to have your email address. I think in practicality, companies are just deleting it. But let's say they stopped a product or a service in 2019. Let's say they stopped it in November of 2019. When they go back in, you know, summer of 2020 to delete, are they even going to pull that product up?
Good question.
Are they even going to look at the data? It's not in it. Nobody's supporting it. It's been discontinued. So,
plus, from an administrative perspective, it seems so much extra work that you need to do to keep track of every single data element, when it was collected and until what point you are allowed to give access to it, and when it has to be, when it is no longer under review. And it seems like a headache, much more than
it
just
is.
Blanket.
Yes, and data inventory is a headache regardless. We all know this. We're trying to make it easier for people. You got to turn in reports. There's companies out there that do data discovery that can help you find out where data elements are. We just announced a partnership with the Big ID. So there's a lot of tools out there to help you, but let's not misrepresent. There is no magic button.
No.
Nothing really makes this easy. It makes it easier, but it doesn't make it easy.
No, there is no magic wand for privacy compliance. Not in Europe and not in the United States and not in any single country in the world. If anybody wants you to believe that, start laughing, because it just isn't true. And coming from Europe, I've seen all the companies struggle with GDPR and GDPR readiness. And when looking at a recent survey that we did, it's the same for the US all over again.
Yeah.
Maybe for the listeners who haven't seen the survey, TrustArk recently did a global privacy benchmark survey. It is available as a full download free of charge on TrustArk's website. But
We'll
provide the link, of course. But what is interesting from the benchmark study is that it covers the whole range of people working on privacy, from top management to the people doing actual work on the work floor. And it is global, from SMEs to multi-billion dollar turnover companies. And there's a specific section in the benchmarks report on CCPA. And if you look at what we ask companies, first of all, we ask the respondents, do you know about CCPA? And there is almost half of the respondent, so 45%, claimed only slight or no knowledge of CCPA at all. And of the ones and that's not just in the US, that's global, but still. Of the 55% that knew about CCPA, we asked more questions, also on how likely is it that you are going to be compliant by July 1st? How ready are you? What plans do you have in place? And maybe it's good to note that this survey was undertaken in the first 2 weeks of May of 2020. So quite close to the CCPA deadline. And at the time, 14% of US respondents that knew about the act, about CCPA, reported they were unlikely to, very unlikely to be CCPA compliant by the deadline. And over 36% reported not even to have started implementation. And those numbers on one hand are shocking. I mean, US companies, 36%, one third, not getting ready for CCPA when they are clearly subject to it and very close to the deadline within 2 months. At the same time, when you look back at GDPR, it was exactly the same, because people were hoping that it would be postponed, that the deadline would be later, that at the 11th hour something magical would happen and compliance would not be necessary. And of course, now we have the additional impact of COVID-19 slowing down preparations. That part is understandable. And some organizations just don't want to be compliant.
Right.
They just want to risk it.
Part of it is they've taken a risk, maybe not a formal risk analysis, but in their in their heads, they're going, oh, it's not a big risk for us. Either because they think they're a small business or because they believe that the regulators are going to go after bigger name businesses. And through GDPR, one of the things that I had thought ahead of time, and I'm not sure it's completely true, but that we're not really going to have a lot of defined regulator guidance under GDPR until we start seeing the decisions come out for small to medium-sized businesses. The investigations and the work done with the mega corporations are going to go on for so long, and they're going to be so litigious that where the guidance is going to come is enforcement against small and medium businesses. And mm-hmm. in some ways, I've seen that come to fruition, but not as much as I thought there might be. So apparently investigations do take quite a while, which is very nice. And as you say, EU doesn't announce the investigations until, you know, they're ready to announce a decision. So maybe that's what it is here in the U.S. Maybe they're thinking, you know, they're not going to be high on the list of target companies. But you can't ever predict who's going to turn in a complaint on you. It can be a former employee. It can be a current employee. It can be an unhappy consumer. Are we here in the U.S. going to act on complaints the way the GDPR does? Because we don't really have that complaint provision in CCPA. So is that going to be a thing? Are there going to be complaints filed? If so, does the Attorney General have people in his office to manage potential numbers of complaints that are come in? I frankly have no insight into that whatsoever, but I will say that under the CPRA, the one that's going to be on the ballot in November, which I believe they had until June 25th to pull it off the ballot. So it's going on the ballot, and it's been confirmed that it's met the criteria to go on the ballot. So now the California people are going to vote on this. It actually creates a consumer rights agency or a consumer privacy agency in California, which is utterly fascinating.
So would a consumer rights agency be similar to a data protection authority here in Europe?
I would assume so, because that's what it would deal with, is the, you know, consumer privacy legislation and the rights that they have. It'd be more than just the CCPA or the CPRA if it passed. The CPRA, to make clear, because when we did the webinar, we got a lot of questions on this. The CPRA is not a wholesale replacement of the CCPA. It is a modification or an amendment of the CCPA. So the CCPA will stay. It will just be amended by the provisions of the CPRA. And, of course, add some key things.
Could you say improved?
I think improved. There are some pieces of the CCPA that could stand improvement. I will say that one of the things I hate doesn't look like it's going away, and that is the applicability to a household. I mm-hmm. really don't like the applicability to a household, although I see why it's there. I understand it. I think there's a lot of legitimacy to it, but I also see a huge ability for abuse to it. But it looks like the regulations to the CCPA try to mitigate some of the potential abuse for households. They defined it as a household that had to be recognized and known by the company as a household.
So what do you see when looking at compliance? I mean, we have some numbers that we just discussed, but when you speak to companies, are they getting ready? Are they concerned? Are they excited, maybe?
I haven't seen excitement.
I have seen excitement from Microsoft, who were excited to announce that all CCPA rights will apply all over the United States. And they put out press release after LinkedIn post, after press release, after LinkedIn post, after Twitter post. So they seem to be excited.
They are excited that they can abide by it. I will say that, because one of the things privacy professionals have been touting for years, it's not necessarily that having a robust privacy program adds to your competitive portfolio. However, if you have a robust privacy program, use it as a competitive differentiator. And so a lot of these companies have stepped up to the plate. Microsoft, Intel, they have stepped up, and their privacy programs are a competitive differentiator for them. It's something they can be open, something they can be proud about, and I think it's fantastic. I use them as examples for companies. If you want to truly be privacy compliant and you want your clients or potential clients to have faith in you, create a trust center online publicly and put your information in there. Maybe it's a login, maybe you only want it for clients, so maybe you put it behind the login. But be open and be transparent about the privacy activities you're taking. And if you come into compliance with things, you should be able to do that. I mean, look at Apple. That's one of the things they differentiated themselves from Samsung, and I'm a Samsung person. I have a feeling you're an Apple person. Mm-hmm,
correct.
But that's one of the things that they were able to differentiate themselves on was the privacy and security that they baked into their products. So if you have it, brag on it. But you notice that we can call to mind the companies that are truly bragging on it.
Yeah, that's certainly true. So what consequences do you expect CCPA to have at a federal level? Will more companies that are able to follow suit and extend the California rights to all Americans or maybe all individuals, notwithstanding their passport, will we see any movement now on federal level to avoid every state getting their own privacy law that is slightly different and thus hurting the economy?
Yeah, COVID really hurt the privacy landscape for 2020. We all had our bets placed on states that were going to pass their privacy laws, and of course, COVID. That's out of one of the vampire movies, isn't it? His name is COVID.
Jeremy Corbyn, you mean? The former Labour leader in the UK? So.
Look this up because now my little ADD brain is going, where does COVID sound familiar? Okay, so where are states going? COVID actually interfered with a lot of the legislation we expected to see. A lot of the opinion is that until we have multiple states, and it probably needs to be more than eight, until we have multiple states that have privacy laws that conflict with each other or who make businesses upset, I don't see us passing a true federal legislation across, you know, encompassing privacy law, bits and pieces here and there, of course. But on the other hand, I also, even if that had happened this year, wouldn't expect there to be true federal legislation passed in 2020. I think this administration, aside from COVID, has more things to worry about than privacy, or at least things that they have on their priority list more than privacy. And I do know that even here in Arizona that we were discussing privacy laws. I haven't looked up to see where they are now because, again, everyone's priorities have shifted to the worldwide pandemic. Arizona is still very, very high up there in the highest quotas running for COVID right now. So yours truly is basically holed up in home in my little cave. But yeah, I don't know. I'd like to see comprehensive federal law, but I really don't see it a priority until states start conflicting with each other. And I know that there are model laws being considered for states to go by, but there's still so much. The biggest differentiation seems to be whether or not there'll be a private right of action.
Yeah, I've had some heated debates on that already.
Yeah, that seems one of the biggest differentiators there is. The other thing I will say, and I'll go back to this, applying the rights across the U.S. isn't really a privacy strategy move for companies. It is an operational move for companies. The way databases and operations happen, if you try to carve out one group of people out of your entire database in the U.S., it's really hard to do that. Mm-hmm. So to make it easy, you basically, I mean, it would be open to everyone anyway. Sure, could they make a decision that they have to figure out where you are and then do it? But that makes it even more complicated because a lot of companies don't collect location on consumers when they have their data. So then you have the operational work to go through to figure out where they're from and does this law apply and all that good stuff. So to make it efficient, roll it out across the whole nation, roll it out across the whole world. If it really comes, and this is one thing I do talk to clients about, if that's the route you decide to go, when it comes to something that you truly care about, that if you lost that data, it would have an impact on you, and so data deletion being the only real one that this might apply to, maybe then go figure out if they have that right to deletion. But only if it's critical that losing that deletion would be incredibly impactful to you. And because you know that there's an exception for deletion if deleting it would break the database and things like that. So if it has an operational impact on that level, you can decline the deletion. But you have to take steps to do what you can. But otherwise, if there is something that is incredibly, incredibly valuable to you, and if you deleted that data, you would lose some incredible value, which is not a reason to turn down a deletion, then maybe that's when you try to find out where they're from and if they have the right for deletion. Otherwise, it's operational mechanics simply to roll it out across the board.
So we have CCPA. We're starting CCPA enforcement. We'll see whether in November we get CPRA, but given the rumor so far, it seems possible that it will pass.
I think so.
What's next?
What's next? Well, then that's going to be interesting. If CPRA passes, I think the entire world is going to be watching this consumer privacy agency be developed. I think they've even proposed the money come from other budgets, $10 million, whatever, and they talk about the number of people with the FTC that enforce privacy across the U.S. So I think it's going to be fascinating to watch it. I also think that come 2021, as long as the pandemic is over, to the extent it can be, I think we really will see states go back to focusing on privacy. And if they do, then we may have a possibility for a federal law. I know a lot of privacy people think there's a good possibility for a federal law. I'm a little bit more skeptical.
Well, we'll see what happens. By the time it does, I'm sure we'll have another opportunity to speak about it.
I think we will, because I think Shrimps 2 may feed into that decision as well. So I'm really excited for that. Well, excited might be a different
Yes, point. I am excited about Shrimps 2. I mean, it, left or right, it will lead to a good discussion.
Exactly.
Whatever the court will do, and we'll have that discussion in 2 weeks. In the interim, you have your open mic episode, because I'll sneak away to France for a week. I'll be on a mountain without Wi-Fi and will not be able to record, but I've seen that there's tons of people who have already volunteered to join the episode. If you still want to, and it is still before July 9th, reach out to Kay, and you'll be able to join as well for the open mic discussion.
Yeah, write us. We put our email out there. Write us. Tag us on Facebook or Twitter. You can tag me on Facebook.
Absolutely. And you can reach out to us
Twitter,
via email
LinkedIn.
At seriousprivacy@trustart.com. If you like our series, please do tell your friends and colleagues about us. Subscribe in your favorite podcast application. We like to see the numbers increased. Or reach out to us via Twitter at podcastprivacy. You will find Kay directly on Twitter as Heart of Privacy and myself as Europol B. Thank you again for listening to Serious Privacy. Until our next episode, or in my case, 2 episodes from now, goodbye.
And before I say bye, y'all, Paul, I think you're joining me. I'd like to give a shout out to our number one fan, Sophie.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Hear, hear.
Bye, y'all.
That was Serious Privacy.
Hey listeners, looking to navigate the realm of responsible AI data privacy governance? Well, look no further.
Absolutely. TrustArc is paving the way, offering a complete approach to managing privacy risks in the world of AI.
TrustArc allows organizations to confidently use AI with personal or sensitive data, moving forward efficiently and cost-effectively.
And here's the kicker. Protect your company and data with TrustArc's privacy-driven compliance software.
Because their deep automation streamlines data privacy governance, cutting your time to compliance with automated data mapping, risk assessments, and regulatory reporting.
TrustArc's enhancements go way beyond that, helping organizations understand AI better and align cross-functionally on data governance, privacy, and security.
Plus, they provide guidance on privacy governance for AI and how to mitigate risks using frameworks like NIST AI, OECD AI, and the NIMACY Privacy Management Accountability Framework.
If you're aiming for compliance excellence, check out Privacy Central, seriously one of my best parts. It uses automation and privacy expertise to understand your requirements, build and manage your privacy program with ease.
Oh, I agree. Privacy Central is your go-to to measure your progress toward responsible AI data compliance.
Stay ahead with TrustArc's Privacy Central. Visit TrustArc.com now. Ask me and Paul if you have any questions.